Well, hello everyone. Recently, James Lindsay made a video on elite theory, and as the author of the best-selling book, The Populist Delusion, which is a primer on elite theory, and, you know, one of the things I'm known for, you know, across the internet, across the real world, you know, at various institutions and so on, I am a modern purveyor of elite theory. So when somebody critiques it, like James Lindsay, I take that seriously. Unfortunately, he did a 20-minute video, and it was quite disappointing, I have to say, because it was obvious to me that Lindsay had not engaged with any of the material. He hadn't read Populist Delusion. It was obvious to me he hadn't really read Mosca or Pareto or Robert Michels. And okay, in the case of Pareto, you know, The Mind of Society is a big, thick book. It's quite complicated. I can accept that. But, you know, The Ruling Class by Mosca is not that long of a book. Political Parties by Michels, also not that long of a book. Populist Illusion is an even shorter book. So it's not really that difficult, I think, to get some of the core propositions of elite theory correct. One of the things that you're meant to do as an intellectual, you know, I teach foundations of writing, foundations of logic, foundations of rhetoric. What you're meant to do if you master those skills is to show your interlocutors, your opponents, some intellectual charity. And what you should be able to do is to summarize their positions as strongly, if not stronger, than they are able to do. And unfortunately, Lindsay just didn't do that. He didn't give an accurate summary of what elite theory is. So in this video, I'm going to give a couple of quick pointers as to what elite theory is, as to what it isn't, and why Lindsay's entire video fell flat as a result. Okay, so the first thing to mention is that elite theory simply says that the disorganized mass is always ruled over by an organized minority. It says that in politics, the organized minority tends to win over the disorganized mass, whichever way around you want to put it. And that organized minority is called the ruling class, or they are the rulers, and the disorganized majority is the mass or the ruled. Okay? Now, in his video, James Lindsay didn't really come up with this formulation. He said it said something like, in every society, elites rule. Okay. I mean, that's another version of saying it. And then he said something like, well, that's a tautology, or by definition, it's true, or it's just saying, you know, in every society, there is an elite class. Okay, at some level, that is right. But elite theory makes a much stronger claim. It says that regardless of what you call the system, whether you call it monarchy, whether you call it a communist state, whether you call it social democratic, liberal democratic, a merchant republic, whatever you want to call your system of government, an aristocracy, feudalism, you name it, they all basically have the same structure and the same principles apply to power no matter what you call the system, namely that the organized minority rule over the disorganized mass. Now, people, when they hear this, they say, well, that seems true. It's basically right that to get anywhere in this world, you need to get together with some friends and plan together, work together in order to bring about some outcome. The problem is, and this is, again, where elite theory goes a lot deeper than simply saying this, is that the current ruling class, that is the people who are in power right now, have an absolute advantage over everybody else who is trying to organize. They are the ultimate organized minority, and they have all sorts of advantages. They have a knowledge advantage, they have a communications advantage, they have other advantages, technical expertise and skills, managerialism, if you want to go that far, that coalesce to make their rule quite difficult to overcome. Overthrowing a government is something that only a handful of people have managed in history. And that set of conditions that keep the ruling class in place and make them extremely difficult to dislodge is known as the iron law of oligarchy, and that is what Michel's political parties is about. So what James Lindsay did in his video, he said, well, there's a difference between elite theory as a descriptive set of tools and a prescriptive elite theory. First of all, none of the elite theorists have any prescriptions. Elite theory is a value-free, it pretends to be a scientific way of trying to approach power and politics. It tries to give, it's like the economics of politics, if that makes any sense. Economics is what they call a vert-fry science. It's value-free. It doesn't look at, it doesn't try to smuggle in any other values there. It just describes what is. And elite theory is the same. Pareto, who's one of the elite theorists, was, of course, more famous as an economist. So it's using some of those tools that you'd use in economics and applying a similar framework to politics and power. It is, if you want, a political science or political science. That's what it was trying to do. That's what all of them said that they were doing in the tradition of somebody like Niccolo Machiavelli, who was also trying to give an ABCs of power, a kind of set of laws of power that are true pretty much regardless of who is in what you call the system. It's not really concerned with this system or that system, democracy or monarchy or whatever. It is concerned with the actual mechanics of power, regardless of what you call it. Now, one of the things that Lindsay did is he said, well, the thing is that the descriptive part, well, that's fine, but the danger comes when it becomes proscriptive. That is, when people take elite theory and they say, this is the way things ought to be, this is the way things should be. He says it basically goes over the is-ought gap that David Hume talked about. And this, again, is an issue because, as far as I know, none of the elite theorists did that, or none of them do that in their work. That is not the point of it. And in my book, The Populist Delusion, which is a work of elite theory, I also do not advocate for any particular system of government. Now, then James Lindsay went on to make a more moral argument or a more normative argument, where he says, well, the problem is that once you start advocating for saying this is the way things should be, and he cited Curtis Yarvin advocating for monarchy, when I should be clear, when Curtis Yarvin advocates for monarchy, that is monarchism. That is, he is just making pro-monarchy argument. That's got nothing to do with elite theory. That's just him favouring that system over the other available systems. Elite theory doesn't do that. If anything, the elite theorists, you know, to the extent that they advocate for anything at all, they talk about an aristocracy of the talents. In other words, meritocracy, a system which actually allows the most talented people into the ruling class. They argue that that system would be superior to systems that artificially lock out people of talent from the ruling class. And in fact, if you read Mosca, he says, look, if you look at the old Chinese system, they had a way of accepting in talented people into the ruling class, even though there was an emperor there. Okay, so it was more meritocratic. They also argue that it's a weakness in hereditary systems. You know, let's say you have an idiot king or something like that. This is a problem. Okay, so they do actually, to the extent that they advocate for anything, they just say, well, if you look historically, these systems tend to have a problem if you have a too restricted ruling class. So the ruling class needs to be adaptive enough to absorb talent from the pool of the ruled. Okay. Now, so anyway, so Lindsay was talking about this being a problem, this prescriptive issue, and he says, well, really, when people are talking about elite theory, they're advocating for themselves as a new elite. They're the whole purpose of elite theory is to say we need to be the new elite. That is just not the case at all. Elite theory is a descriptive kind of scientific, or you could say quasi-scientific, empirical method of looking at the mechanics of power, the kind of logic of power, and then using that as a way of looking at politics and power today, or you can look at it historically as well. And it does give you all sorts of illuminating insights, but it is descriptive. It is a descriptive and analytical tool. It is not proscriptive. It's not saying this is the way things ought to be, right? This is Machiavelli's number one maxim. I write as things are, not as they ought to be. But then we get to the crux of where Lindsay's video falls flat for me, which was when he was talking about America and the American Constitution and the Founding Fathers and saying, well, this is anti-American to say, to talk about elite theory, that the organized minority rule over the disorganized mass goes against the ideology of the American experiment, as he calls it. Now, this gets to the crux of the matter, because if you understand elite theory properly, they are making a much stronger claim. They say, essentially, that democracy is impossible, that states that claim to rule in the name of the people are lying, that this is a delusion. That's the populist delusion. The idea that the people are actually ruling rather than the ruling class is a lie. And what Mosca, Pareto and Michels do in their books is they show you all of the ways in which the iron law of oligarchy tends to prevail. They show you the ways in which dissident energies are contained by the system. They show you the ways in which power, capital P power, generally is able to outmaneuver the rival castles, as I call them. And of course, later works like James Burnham's Managerial Revolution and his Machiavellian's book, and Bertrand de Juvenel is another person I talk about. These aren't typically thought of as the classical elite theorists, but they built on those ideas. Later on, Gottfried and Francis as well. But what they're showing is that any system that claims that it's ruling in the name of the people tends to be lying about that fact. And when I start the book, I cite a statistic that over they did this study in Chicago showing that over 17,000 law, over 1,700 laws in America in the past 20 or 30 years, they did this kind of quantitative study across all of these different laws that were passed by Congress and by the Senate. And they showed no correlation whatsoever with the wishes of the people, with the voters. Voters seldom, if ever, get truly what they voted for. And what Mosca says is that it's not really accurate to say that the people voted a certain person into power. It's more accurate to say that that person has themselves put into power by their friends. And when it comes to big mass democracies, of course, power is concentrated in the media, in newspapers, in the people who are able to fund campaigns, in money men, in lobby groups, and so on and so forth. So when people talk about the ruling class in America, they're not just talking about, I mean, Lindsay was talking about the Clintons and the Bushes and so on. But an elite theory perspective would say, well, actually, we need to look at banking groups. We need to look at, I mean, he was talking about people like Klaus Schwab and WEF and so on and Davos. They would say, well, all of these people constitute a ruling class. And these individuals in Davos and in investment banks and elsewhere, the funders of the Democrat Party and the Republicans, they are not the people, and yet they're the ones, they are the organized minority, they are the ruling class, and they are the ones who have a habit of getting their own way. Defense contractors, the military industrial complex. The American people didn't want any of these things, and yet they got them. A lot of the things that have happened in American history were not voted for. They were either passed by judicial activism, by various different judges, or Supreme Court rulings, or Congress doing, you know, passing these massive pork stuffed bills. You know, a lot of the stuff, woke, all of these things come from organized minorities. It's not always the same organized minority. There can be different ones at different times and places who are getting their way over the disorganized mass. So what the elite theorists are saying is that the fundamental dream of the American Constitution is just a line. It's no different. Saying the will of the people, the will of the people, is no different from a medieval king saying, I rule in the name of divine right. It's just what Moskow calls a political formula. It's just a line. As I've talked about so many times, BS, 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 therefore I rule. That is fundamentally all those lines are. And what democracy is particularly good at doing is hiding this fact. It's particularly good at allowing enough normal, quote-unquote normal people into the ruling class, to renew the ruling class, and to give a semblance of upwards mobility. You could say this is an advantage of democracy. Another advantage of democracy is the fact that so many people believe that when they cast a vote, it has there's a genuine link between that vote and an actual outcome. But we've seen so many times politicians just openly lie. In this country, the people voted for Boris Johnson. They voted to take back control, Brexit and all of that. Boris Johnson promptly flooded the country with more immigrants than in the entire history. From 1066 to now, Boris Johnson let in more people. 6 million people in 5 years or something ridiculous. Nobody voted for that. Nobody voted for it. And yet this is what the ruling class did. So Lindsay's point misses the mark because he hasn't grasped what elite theory is saying. Elite theory is not saying it's bad to have the desire of the interests of the ruled registered by the ruling class. It's not saying that the dream of democracy is bad per se. It's simply saying that it's impossible. It's impossible due to the mechanics of power. It's impossible because let's just pretend you get the people rising up as an inchoate mob. Sooner or later, a leader has to emerge to get anywhere. You could take the analogy of an army. The rabble of 1,000 people against 100 well-trained men with a captain. Who wins? The 1,000, the rabble, or the 100 trained men? The 100 trained men win 10 times out of 10. So what the elite theorists are saying is that with the best will in the world, and Michel's actually was part of a Democratic Party, saw all of this stuff up front. He was part of a party called the German Social Democrats, who were against going to war, World War I. And then on the eve, when they just as soon as they got into power, they sold out their base. I mean, how many times have you seen it? And suddenly they were pro-war. And Michel was like, how has this happened? The iron law of oligarchy prevailed again. So Lindsay gave a very superficial précis of what elite theory is. And then, you know, he ends with a warning saying, well, anyone pushing this, anyone talking about elite theory, you need to treat with caution. In fact, he spent most of the 20 minutes of his video talking about Marxism and talking about Lenin and vanguardism and things like that, Well, you could say that the Marxists kind of stumbled into some aspect of elite theory by recognizing that there needs to be an organized minority and who rule over the disorganized mass. But it's not actually accurate to say that Marxist vanguardism is the same as elite theory. Marxists actually rejected elite theory and they had a big problem with it. Why did they have a problem with it? Well, there was two reasons why the Marxists had a problem with elite theory. There were three reasons, actually. The third one was by Gramsci, who I'm sure Lindsay is aware of. But let's go through all three of them, okay? So the first reason was that in classic Marxism, it's all about the class struggle. And the real problem is that the capitalists are the ruling class. They own the means of production. And of course, Marxism is all about the workers rising up and seizing the means of production. So the first problem that the Marxists have with elite theory is that it's too universal. Elite theorists want to have this kind of one theory for all systems, whereas the Marxists have a very specific critique of capitalism itself and of the capitalist class. Okay, and they say, well, the elite theorists don't go far enough, or they're letting the capitalists off the hook, or something. They had a problem that the elite theorists were not focused on ownership of the means of production. This is the critical thing in Marxism. Whereas the elite theorists were like, no, actually, all systems, regardless of who owns what, all systems basically gravitate towards the organized minority. And this is the principle, not the ownership. This was the revolutionary thing in James Burnham's managerial revolution, where he actually talks about a severing between ownership of the means of production and control. This is managerialism. When BlackRock, who've got $10 trillion of assets, they control vast swathes of resources, but they don't own them. Larry Fink does not personally own the $10 trillion of assets that he manages. He is a manager. BlackRock is an asset manager. What James Burnham is talking about in Managerial Revolution, and what James Lindsay should learn, is that when you get passive shareholders or mass shareholders, the same elite theory principles apply, because the shareholders are actually being ruled over by the organized minority, who are the asset managers, or the expert class, who like the Black Rocks of this world, and all of the individual pension holders in those pension funds. They don't know what's happening with their money. They don't know that their money is being used to fund woke and ESG and all of this sort of stuff. Those decisions have been taken on their behalf, in much the same way that the government or politicians take decisions on your behalf when you give them a vote. And he's saying that in exactly the same way that democracy in practice actually just functions like any other system, in a top-down triangle with the elites at the top ruling over the masses, in exactly the same way that happens with mass shareholder capitalism as well. So the point of Burnham is that where once capitalists like Henry Ford, the old tycoons, the JP Morgans, had real concentrated power because they were the only owner of their company, now when you kind of make the company public and you let lots of people own shares, the power is then concentrated in the managers and it's taken away from the classic tycoon, and it goes to the CEO, who is, let's face it, a manager, this is what the managerial class was about, okay? Which is just a bit of applied elite theory, taking into account what happened in the 20th century. Anyway, James Lindsay really misses that, okay? Second thing that Marxists that didn't like, sorry, when I'm doing these bits to camera, I digress more than when I do the PowerPoint. I'm still getting used to it. You're going to have to bear with me, friends, as I get used to this new setup, okay? The second thing that Marxists don't like about elite theory is that it draws attention to their own power when they're in power. Okay, so what Marxists want to say is that, well, when capitalists are in charge, that's bad, but when it's us, that's good. And elite theory still draws attention to the fact that they and they alone are in power. Now, let's not forget, in the BSBSI rule of Marxism, of communism, they still style themselves as people's republics or as democracies. That's why so many communist countries in history have had the word democratic in the title. The idea is that there's a dictatorship of the proletariat, so that when Lenin or Stalin or whoever else in the Politburo were making decisions on behalf of the people, they were doing it in the name of the people, and that the people actually consent to that in a more or less democratic manner. Now, of course, we can see that that is bollocks, that's BS. It's easier to see in that scenario. What the elite theorists are saying is that it's not only true of the USSR, it's also true of the USA, of Great Britain, of France, and any other country that claims to be liberal democratic too. Liberal democracy is as totalitarian, as top-down, and as undemocratic as classic kind of Marxist states like the USSR. I can see James Lindsay's head exploding as I say this, but this is the claim. And it's quite difficult, I think, to argue against that, given all of the things that we've witnessed, given so many of the things that have happened have been completely against the quote-unquote will of the people. So much of James Lindsay's own work on wokery, on WEF, on globalists and all of these sort of figures is exactly what we're talking about here. So I don't really know why he would be against the idea. Okay, you could say, well, I hold as an ideal the system that the founding fathers set up in the US Constitution. You could say that this is an ideal of mine. This is the way things ought to be. That's fair enough. But you also should then recognize, did the USA actually turn out as the founding fathers envisioned? Did the American experiment work and deliver democracy for the people, by the people? It's very difficult to maintain that in 2025 after all of the stuff we've witnessed our entire lives, out of all the things that have happened, the people just did not support. And so many of the things are retconned after the fact. You know, the things that were unpopular at the time, that were brought about by, the organized minority, whoever that happened to be at the time, are then later, so, you know, written up as if they have the support of everybody. And so much of the time, that is not true when you start to investigate these things. The third reason that the Marxists had a problem with elite theory is that they did not take into account ideology enough. This was Antonio Gramsci's critique in his book Prison Notebooks. The modern print section of that is basically a critique of elite theory. Very interesting. I would say that is the bit that the Marxists probably have a point there. And later theorists like Gottfried and Sam Francis and, mainly those two, they actually took ideas from people like Gramsci and Louis Althusser and other leftist theorists of ideology and of mass manipulation, Chomsky as well. Manufacturing consent, Jacques Ellul, all of these sorts of people, Guy Debord, all of these guys wrote on the manufacturing of consent that takes place in a democracy, in a mass democracy, okay? Media manipulation, in other words, propaganda, Edward Bernays, all of these sorts of people. And this, it's fair to say, was a missing component in Mosca, Pareto and Michel. I say missing, they do talk about newspapers, but of course you've got to remember these guys were writing at the end of the 20th century, and so there was the role of mass media, the role of television, the role of radio, all of these things happen after they were writing. So it's kind of, in a way, it's just updating it for the 20th century a little bit to talk more about the role of manufacturing consent and quote-unquote ideology, okay? So I'd say the Marxists had a decent point on the third point there. So anyway, it's too reductive to say that, Marxists kind of believed in elite theory. Marxists explicitly rejected elite theory for the reasons that I talked about. They never took Mosca, Pareto, and Michels on board or recognized them as one of their own. And then, naturally, after the Second World War, there was an attempt by, let's say, the liberal establishment to attack elite theory or to reject elite theory in the name of liberal democracy. If you ask me, a lot of those critiques that were written in the 50s and the 60s completely fail to address the main arguments that they come up with, although there are some interesting bits. Another interesting thing to say is that some elements of what you might call the deep state, Rand Corporation as one example, various different think tanks, Hoover Institute, they actually took elite theory on board. So did the neocons. They took elite theory on board, as well as Carl Schmitt. Some leftists took elite theory on board at different times. So it's not like a total blanket rejection after the Second World War. You get in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s, all sorts of people writing on elite theory and basically accepting its central tenets. And the reason that they accept it is basically because it's true. It's almost impossible to deny what elite theory is saying. It's almost like trying to deny something as fundamental as the law of supply and demand. You know, if a resource becomes scarce, the price goes up, because more people want it and they bid the price up. This is a universal law of economics. The laws of elite theory function in the same way, and they are morally neutral. It's not saying this system or that system, or it's not advocating for anything. It is just descriptive. And as far as I know, no elite theorists have tried to use elite theory to advocate for this system or that system. So what Lindsay is doing is he's conflating completely different things. Curtis Yarvin, as one example, is not really an elite theorist in the classic sense. He may use a couple of bits and pieces from elite theory here and there, but his pro-monarchy arguments are not predicated on elite theory. They're not, neither are Hans Hermann Hoppe's. It's a completely different thing. He is moving from the is to the ought, but with it, he's moving into something that is not elite theory. And I think it's worth getting that clear, really. Okay? So, I mean, you're hearing it from the horse's mouth. When people talk about elite theory, they are not necessarily saying, oh, the new elite needs to be us. Now, some people may have made that argument. Vivek Ramaswamy, as one example, cited James Burnham and claimed to be the new elites being cycled in. To my knowledge, almost nobody in history has kind of come into power as an elite theorist, because it's just a description of what happened in the ABCs of... Now, that you could get some people, Tony Blair as one example, who understood it. Maybe Mussolini understood elite theory. He read them. But it's kind of incidental, because whether they knew elite theory or didn't know elite theory, they're still going to be engaging in those ABCs of power. Do you see what I mean? It's like you don't actually need to understand economics to engage in the economy or to buy a sandwich, for example. But an economist could come around and explain to you what you're not understanding. And in exactly the same way, an elite theorist can actually describe what is happening, the nuts and bolts and mechanics of what is happening, in a way that the people who are engaged with it may not even understand. Okay? This thing about the organized minority is not controversial, I should say, because it is simply how politics works. There was a very good book by Mancor Olsen, O-L-S-E-N, I think it is. I think he was a Scandinavian academic in the 70s, who actually wrote an entire book on the politics of collective action. It was called something like The Politics of Collective Action, where he literally gives the playbook of how, if you're an organized minority in a democracy, you can actually get one over on the rest of the public because you care about your one thing. And most other people are just trying to go about their lives. The public, the mass, is never organized enough around that issue. And that is why in the history of democracy, it tends to be single issue groups who get their way. And it doesn't really matter what that issue is. You know, in this country, you could say, well, there's a Pakistani organized minority who've managed to get their way on all sorts of issues, right? Now, it's like, well, yeah, that is because they are focused on that one thing and everybody else has got 100 different things that they care about and none of them are organized enough to do anything about it. You could have an example from the, like, Nigel Farage, who really, 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 really cared about leaving the EU, actually managed to get his way in the long run. And he did it by being part of an organized minority who cared about that one thing, right? The public seldom, if ever, are united all on one thing. So that's why, that's another technical reason why the organized minority tends to get their own way in a especially in a democracy. All right, I think that's enough. If you want to know more, buy my book, The Populist Delusion. Pick up a course at the academic agency, and I'll catch you all next time. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.